Welcome to the Vertafore Insurance Podcast with Rick Fox. We're here to talk about the industry with some of its biggest influencers. From technology, trends, and current events, if it's happening in insurance, you'll hear about it here. Make sure to tune in every week and join in on the conversation with us on social media at Vertafore. And now, here's Rick Fox.
Welcome back to another episode of the Vertafore Insurance Podcast. I am the host, Rick Fox. And today we're taking this thing global. I'm very excited to have Clive O'Connell on today. Clive is he and I don't know each other well. We've had a few phone conversations now, and I'm really excited about today, not only because of the subject matter that he is about to hit you guys with, but also because he has a really cool English accent. And for me, that just makes people sound smarter. So he's already smarter than me, but the accent really adds to that. So anyway, Clive O'Connell. He's an attorney. He is the director and head of insurance and reinsurance at the firm McCarthy Denning in London. Clive, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to have you. And I think the best way to get started is just, you know, tell us your story. Tell us how Clive O'Connell got to this part in his career.
Well, hello, Rick, and thank you very much for having me on.
See, listen to that. Listen already. Already you sound smart with that accent. Great.
I don't have an accent, Rick. I can assure you. I'm a lawyer. I've been practicing law for a particularly long time. And in about 1982, I got involved in reinsurance for the first time. And ever since then, I've been doing reinsurance disputes, reinsurance product creation wordings, and also more complex financial reinsurance, alternative risk transfer, and insurance-linked securities work, all of which have led me to have a great interest in the way the strategic background to insurance and insurance companies. It's something I've delved into possibly more than I ought to for my immediate practices sake, but something that's very relevant as the basis to understand what my clients have needed over the years. Because of that, I become involved in a variety of things. I was for quite a long time on the board of the International Insurance Society. I'm also a non-executive director of a number of companies, for example, an insurance-linked securities fund manager, as well as an insurtech startup. So I've managed to use my interest to get to look at their business from a variety of different bases. But in many ways, one of the most interesting is as a lawyer, because as a lawyer, I see both the construction of new ideas and have input into that, but also I see where things go wrong. And that has proved very valuable when dealing with some insurtech and other novel issues.
Well, and Clive, no question, just from that quick introduction that you have information in that brain of yours that will be extremely positive for our listeners to hear. So again, thank you for coming on. I think the best way to kind of kick this off for me is to kind of tell the story of how we got to where we are. And that is, you know, I'm on LinkedIn and I see an article that someone else in my universe has liked. And the title of the article was Insurance Industry Must Open Mind to the Energy from InsurTech. And I thought, that's an interesting title. I want to read that. And it was your piece. And I know you write a lot and you publish a lot of articles and blogs and things like that. But I read this piece and I said, I actually called our producer, Dylan. And I said, Dylan, we need to get Clive on. And then the bonus was you just have the really good accent. So there's a lot of good things going on here, but so I want to dig into not that article specifically, but the meat behind it, which is InsurTech is here and it's not going anywhere and it's going to keep coming. So from your perspective and you have a little different angle because one, you are in Europe, two, you are an attorney, but you get to see it from a different, like maybe out of a different lens. So I'm very excited to hear kind of your thoughts on InsurTech and kind of where the meat on the bone is there and what people really need to be focused in on. So I'm just going to kind of hand it over to you and say, talk to me sort of, you know, in terms of InsurTech and your thoughts.
Okay. Well, the insurance industry is based upon legally defined products and regulation, which varies from country to country, jurisdiction to jurisdiction. But the insurance law that we use goes back a very long time. Indeed, there are many principles of insurance law that predate American independence, which is why we have a lot of common ideas between the UK and US.
Okay. Yep.
A lot of insurance law and legal definition of products also occurred during the Victorian era and has stood us in good stead up till now. Insurance regulation was developed in the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s, as well, and more recently, but to a large degree. But both the law and regulation has always been developed looking backwards, whereas at the moment, with technology, we have to look forwards. And the problem that exists at the moment is that InsurTech is developing some very exciting ideas which law and regulation don't necessarily keep up with. And as a lawyer, that becomes incredibly interesting and fascinating. And it's a way of having to not so much rein in the tech-minded people, mm-hmm. but work with them to try and ensure that the products that they're developing work within the framework within which they must work. InsurTech is something that is definitely here to stay. The essence of InsurTech is that it saves money. It takes right. away a lot of frictional cost.
Right.
And as soon as one takes away frictional cost, one is into a position where there's no going back. If one person comes up with a brilliant idea that knocks out 10 percentage points of an expense ratio, that person has an amazing advantage, and the others will rush to catch up and erode that advantage. But those 10 points are gone forever.
Well, Clive, let me jump in there really quick. It's interesting to hear your perspective on it, because we've talked about this on other podcasts. We've talked about InsurTech, its impact, and the relevancy that it has. And you hit on a point that I want to kind of dig in on there, which is, when one person does it, people then kind of try to get on. They're like, if that works, then I will do it. That's the constant evolution of InsurTech, right? It's then it becomes the norm. Like in society, Amazon has become the norm for online shopping, and everyone tries to get to that level. But then it's that next phase, right? It's like getting from, okay, one person is doing it, 10 people are using this idea or concept or way of doing business. Now it's a million, now it's everyone. And then it's the next big thing, right? I mean, is that kind of what you're talking about?
I think that is the way necessarily that things will go. And things can go pretty quickly as well. Mm-hmm. We've seen in the past direct telesales in insurance. In the UK, Direct Line started up business in the early 80s and changed the way in which insurance was sold.
Yep.
People could pick up a phone, get a quote, do the deal there and then. And the high street, the main streets, as we call them, the high streets, we call them over here, used to always have little insurance brokers on them. They disappeared pretty quickly.
Right.
Because there was no need for them anymore. And everybody else got in on the act of selling directly over the telephone. Then it went to selling online. But now it's developing into people selling through, not merely selling through telephones, but utilizing software to do all the underwriting, pricing, and various other things, including much of the claims analysis.
So Clive, talk to me a little bit about how that's impacting not just the London market, but the world market. I mean, we're talking about the approach that you have to technology. If I'm in the business and I'm listening to this and I'm going, yeah, that's something I need to focus on. How do I focus on it? Like, how do I get myself involved in that?
I think that's the holy grail that everybody is searching for. It's difficult. We're not anywhere near finality yet on InsurTech. It hasn't been developed to its fullest possible extent by any stretch, and will continue to evolve through time. But I think over the next 5 to 10 years, we will see a fundamental revolution in the way in which insurance is handled. and it will change things significantly. But you mentioned the London market. In London, average expense ratios are currently running between 32 and 35%. At Lloyd's, expense ratios are 40%. Those are unsustainable.
Right.
They need to be brought down. And the only way that they can be brought down is by the utilization of technology. And once the London market and Lloyd's, which are primarily major commercial insurance underwriters and reinsurance underwriters, adopt good, sound principles of insurtech and therefore eliminate a lot of wasted cost, then they'll be able to offer, as reinsurers, insurtech solutions to their underlying insurers.
Right.
And therefore, insurers around the world will be looking to make sure that the way in which they're underwriting their own insurance integrates neatly into the reinsurance offering that it is there, because they know that if they do that, there will be considerable savings.
Okay, so let's this to me is kind of the snowball rolling downhill, right? This is the once someone does it, someone else is starting to do it, and it moves down the chain from the largest insurance companies in the world to the even down to a regional in the United States, a regional carrier, and then that all trickles down to the agency business. So as I'm sitting here in California right now, and I'm thinking, and I own an agency, and I'm thinking about insurtech globally, and I don't mean just because you and I are on different continents. I mean the big picture of how insurtech's going to affect my agency. I'm looking at that, and I'm thinking, okay, how am I preparing myself as a business person to be ready for that? That's one. Two is, how am I deciding what technology is right for me? And then I think finally, it's how is there a regulatory or legal impact that's going to either stop or the opposite of stop, which is going to push forward some of this technology. How do I do that? So if I'm sitting here at that level, Clive, what's your advice to that person?
The first thing is how to be ready. I think that is a very, very important.
Yeah.
Question, because what we could see happening, say you've got an agency that's writing business for a large principal elsewhere, and suddenly a startup comes along armed with massive technology that can generate 20 times the premium volume that the existing agency can generate, and can do so for a considerably less sum of money. The principal, the capacity provider, is probably going to look to that new startup rather than to the old traditional agent, especially if that capacity provider is trying to reduce its expense ratio from 35% to 25% or 15%,
right,
so it can itself stay relevant and stay competitive. And that's a huge, huge ask for traditional agents. I think there is saving, though. Either one can be one of the tech startups, or one can work with one's principals, with the capacity providers, to offer tech solutions and work with them to provide those tech solutions. If one cannot oneself develop the tech solutions, because as we know, that's a fairly hit or miss issue. Not everybody is going to be a unicorn and develop the kind of market-changing technology. But it's being aware that one needs to adapt technologically. It's being ready to do that. And it's being getting out there and making sure that one is absolutely up to the minute in what's available and what can be done, and working with capacity providers to do that.
Well, and Clive, I think what I've been saying on this podcast for those that have been listening is, you know, different but similar concepts and ideas to what we're talking about here, which is if you're not on the boat with InsurTech, you're going to start drowning. You've got to be part of that. What's great about this conversation is when you say it, it just probably makes more sense to them because it just sounds way better. So I'm going to change gears on you just real quickly. and this is a little off topic, but the Man City Football Club has won the last two Premier Leagues. That is my football club. How does that make you feel, Clive?
Disappointed, I think, is the fair word to say. But I would like to point out that Chelsea are the most successful Premier League club in the last 15, 20 years.
Yes, you're right. You're right. But we're gonna take what we've got right now. We've got a couple in a row, and we're going to stick with that. Of course, I'm way over here in the States, and we Man City's been pretty good for a while, so it's been easy to cheer for them. Anyway, I just had to change gears on you. I apologize.
Of course.
All right. So here's the next thing I want to talk about. You and I were talking about this on the phone last week. We were talking about, because of all of the stuff that you have your hands in, that you're involved with, you were recently at a pitch session with 25 InsurTechs. And you and I started chatting about that. And I thought, wow, some of the stuff you had to say just briefly is I want to dig into that. So talk to me about what that was. And what your takeaways from it were, because I think that's an interesting topic for our listeners to get their arms around.
Okay. Well, one thing I do quite a lot of is writing about insurance, reinsurance topics. And I was very kindly invited by one of the magazines that I sometimes write for to go along to an InsurTech day that they were having. And I was asked specifically to sit through a pitch session that was being held where 25 InsurTech startups were given 7 minutes each to present what they were up to. And it was absolutely fascinating and illuminating. And I learned a lot about it. Perhaps not what those InsurTech startups imagined I'd learn about it, but I learned quite a lot. One of the first things, and this is a point you actually raised earlier and I didn't get to answer, it was about regulation and legal impact.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the ideas that were coming up, you thought, wow, that's a very exciting deal on these kind of crowdsourcing, risk-sharing concepts that people were coming up with. But when you actually looked at what they were trying to sell from a regulatory or legal perspective, they possibly weren't actually selling insurance, but were selling something else.
Oh, interesting.
And in English law, and to an extent in other laws as well, there is a very real demarcation between what is gambling, what is insurance, and what is some form of banking product like a derivative. And they are different animals. They're regulated in a very different way. And insurers can only do insurance. There are very rigid fences between them. And hearing some of these pitches, there was a concern that there were some bright ideas, but they did need to be shoehorned somehow into the regulatory and legal structure that we have. Okay. And hopefully that's where someone like me comes in.
Right.
The second thing that was notable about it was that there were a lot of young people wearing t-shirts and jeans with very bright ideas. And I just sat there and thought from time to time, gosh, if only this chap spoke to the woman who spoke three sessions ago, and they in turn spoke to the two people who were speaking this morning, together they could have a really brilliant concept. A lot of them were good ideas for part of an issue, but they weren't an overall solution.
So let me ask you on that, Clive, because so let's go back first to the t-shirts and jeans. Like, I'm sitting here wearing a hoodie right now. I'm always in a hoodie when I'm in my home office. Don't tell my boss. But are you saying that within the 25, you're saying like number 3 and number 10 and number 16 should get together and make something brilliant? Or are you saying that number 3 should be talking to somebody that's been doing this for 30 years, that's wearing, you know, dress shoes and a tie? Like, talk to me, like, break that down.
I think there are two sides to that.
Okay, good. Is, okay,
and what I've done I've worked with some people who do wear t-shirts and jeans, whereas I'm more often seen with a suit and tie on.
I picture you just from your voice, and we haven't met in person. I picture you with a suit and tie on.
Oh, thank you. And I've got my jacket on as we speak, because I wouldn't like to speak on something like this without a jacket on. It's when those very smart techie kids are going out looking for capital, looking for capacity, and looking to build up their concepts, it is very important that they have somebody who can translate for them. I've seen among the techie kids some real frustration at the dinosaurs that they've met. People in the insurance industry who yes. seem absolutely as dull as ditch water to them. And they don't necessarily understand the constraint. Yes, there are dinosaurs in the industry. Of course. Know that.
Of course.
But there are also good, bright insurance people with a wealth of experience who are constrained by the nature of insurance itself and the regulation of insurance and the law of insurance. And therefore, they can't be as flexible and wild and inventive as these.
Is that because these, let me ask you, is that because these, this, and we'll say the youth, the tennis shoes and the jeans kids, we'll say, is that because they don't understand it? Is it because they're more creative and more forward thinking? Or is it because, to your point, the people that know the business, know the industry, people like you that can instantly go, okay, red flag, red flag, red flag. What is the because this is the part, right? We're trying to mesh tech people, like, because there are people that don't know anything about insurance, and there are dinosaurs is a little bit of a tough word. Let's say seasoned insurance people that don't know very much about tech. And when we're trying to blend those two realities together, you know, where can they learn from each other? Where is the sweet spot, so to speak?
And the sweet spot is what we're all trying to find. And that
right.
is yeah. what people like me have to do, is to try and bring them together and explain to the techie people, actually, these aren't dinosaurs. These are very experienced, intelligent people who are looking at the concepts that they can utilize within the context of their working environment. And one has to explain to the besuited white middle-class, middle-aged gentlemen, as they right. tend to be here yep. in London, that these tech guys, they're not wearing suits, but they got bright ideas.
Right.
And at the same time, help those people to understand also is the fact that somebody turns up with an Apple and jeans and t-shirt doesn't mean that their idea is a good, sound business model either.
Right. That's a good
and,
point.
And, you know, too many people can be seduced by tech and waste money on tech. What they need to do is to find the right tech to solve the problem.
Yeah, I think you really, what's great about this, regardless of we keep coming back to it, and apparently you don't think you have an accent, but regardless of how cool your voice sounds, the point you're making from the angle that you're making it is a refreshing kind of a look at this, because we all look at that and we think, you know, and it's so stereotypical, but the 55 to 65 year old gentleman here in the States as well, you know, that's been doing insurance since he was young, and if it ain't broke, don't fix it, and we know what we're doing, and then you've got these kids literally just out of college that have brilliant ideas. And when we can find a way for those two to really connect is when, you know, then we've got something. And I'm not saying that isn't happening. So there's plenty of very successful insurtech going on. But I think that you hit on some points there that are very relevant, because you've got this bridge that needs to be gapped. It's gap that needs to be bridged, I guess, that is, it's such a change in the way, like just from 20 years ago, the way things are done now. So go back to the pitch, go to the other part for me.
Well, another thing that came across in that pitch was there were 25 pitches. 19 of them were consumer orientated.
Okay.
General insurance pitches. 6 were what I would refer to as London market pitches. Okay. And the difference between those and the others were that they were presented by and large by superannuated claims people who had lost their way in their careers, and they were wearing suits and ties, and they were trying to sell products that were based on technology that's been around for the last 10 years or so in other areas. And it was really quite depressing. And talking to a number of people in the London market, one hears this perennial refrain that, oh, insurtech's really exciting for motor, for householders, but of course it doesn't apply to us because we bring such a wealth of experience and understanding and knowledge, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and professionalism to our underwriting that no one could possibly replace us. And these are the people working in a market where the expense ratios are roughly 35 to 40%.
Right.
And because of that, these are the people who are possibly the most vulnerable of the lot and who ought to be spending their time looking for solutions. And there are solutions. We've seen those solutions apply in areas such as satellite insurance, where good data and insurance and computer programs and computer models have completely and fundamentally changed the basis of underwriting satellite risk. And it's again, things like cargo insurance, absolutely susceptible to insurtech solutions because all the data is there.
Right. Well, and you know what, Dylan, mark this spot on this podcast. Dylan's our producer. We've never talked about satellite insurance on the podcast before, so that is a first for us. So thank you for that, Clive.
My pleasure.
So go back. Okay, so I don't want to get too far off of that other the other topic which I brought up, and you said that's two different things. The second one was, of those 25 pitches, if, like we said, number 3 and number 10 and number 14 talk to each other, then we'd have, like, talk to me about what you felt about that environment.
That's been an interesting aspect to startups in the world of insurtech over in this country. What we've seen a lot of is some very bright ideas, which to some extent could get backing from capacity, but failed to get working capital. And the reason they failed to get working capital was that they were looking for too little money and they had the word insurance involved in them.
Right.
And venture capitalists like to invest more money for larger slices of equity, and they also don't like the word insurance. And a lot of those bright ideas never quite got off the ground, either because they simply weren't holistic enough. They weren't giving a solution to the whole insurance problem. They were far too narrow. One could have ended up coming out of that pitch session with 25 apps on one's phone, and rather than what most consumers want, which is one app which can take care of all of their insurance needs.
Right.
What we've seen perhaps in the last year or so is more of the large insurers suddenly waking up to the fact that they've got to do something about insurtech. I mean, Lloyd's has now got a tech lab. Aviva, the large British composite insurer, has got a garage where they've got techies going in their jeans and T-shirts and doing various things. And the idea is that then those insurers get to cherry pick the ideas that they like and bring them in-house.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something we're going to see a lot of happening. And I think that of the 25 pitches that I saw, give it a little while, a lot of those guys will be working with large insurers rather than becoming
collaborators
in their own right. Yeah.
Collaborating with them. Yeah, I love that. All right. So I don't want to take too much of your time, because I know even though it's morning for me, it's late afternoon and there's probably a pub down the street calling your name right now, Clive. But I just wanted to somehow get the word pub in there. That was what I wanted. So talk to me a little, just quickly, give me quickly sort of the London market and how that's, for us over here in the States that might not quite understand the breadth of it and how that relates to not only the United States market, but the global market. Talk to me a little bit about that.
The London market is a global insurance and reinsurance market. It is very much a hub. A lot of the business that comes into it is insurance, but there's also a lot of insurance as well. And I mean, if you take Lloyd's as a good microcosm of the whole London market, something around 60% of Lloyd's business is from the US. It is a very big proponent. Now, with Brexit coming up, there is going to be greater emphasis on building up business from the US and other non-European regions. And so what happens within the London market, particularly where it involves either insurance or reinsurance of US business, impacts very clearly onto the US. And if the London market can develop insurtech solutions, which they must do because of the size of their expense ratios, the insurtech solutions that they develop will have an immediate and swift effect on the way in which MGAs operate in the US and the way in which insurers will be able to look to buying reinsurance as well.
Yeah. Okay. I love that. That's an informational piece that I was aware of the size of the market and the sort of, I guess, power of the London market, but to have you kind of explain it out for me makes perfect sense. I appreciate that.
Whereas insurance and reinsurance quite often are jurisdictionally bound by law and regulation, the technology that drives them in the future is susceptible to global utilization. And therefore, where technology is developed in one country, it can be applied in many. And that's going to be a very real change. And that's why many insurers will become more global than they are today.
Well, and that's what's so great about this. When we started talking, I was really excited that we had this, you know, we had a different flavor than just our little, you know, slice of the pie over here in the US to kind of get a global perspective and hear that there are things that are different, but there are a lot of things that are exactly the same. And you're talking about, when you talk about insurtech pitches and all of the, you know, how do we blend the new with the old and being prepared for the changes, like that's all relevant everywhere. And then to kind of get an additional perspective on kind of what that trickle down is from the London market is, it's really, really cool. I want to say one more thing. You know, I don't know if I already mentioned this, but Manchester City has won the last two Premier Leagues. Did I mention that already? I can't remember. Dylan, did I mention that?
I think the key point there is that English football has become global. And that's English so insurance is also global.
So the only thing that gets me is when I've got a, you know, the kickoff is at 4:55 a.m. my time. That doesn't really work for me on a Saturday morning. But anyway, so Clive, before I let you go, and I'm so glad we were able to do this, and I definitely want to keep in touch and probably do a follow-up, you know, later in the fall or the winter. The one thing I always end this with is I say, if we were to take this next bit and record it and put it in a time capsule and bury it, and someone was going to unbury it, you know, dig it up like in a month or a year or whenever they did, what is your one big piece of advice for the insurance industry? Just one big piece.
My goodness me, that's what we would call a googly, but I think you would call it a swerve ball to throw at me late in the game.
Curveball,
sorry.
Not a swerve ball.
The one bit of advice is to look very careful to firstly embrace technology. Technology is going to save the industry or save particular companies, but to embrace it with caution, looking at all times into how that technology operates within the existing context given by regulation and law.
That's a great one. I did hit you with the curveball, but you nailed it. You hit it out of the park, as we would say here in American baseball.
We would say hit it for six, but I'll let you get away with that.
Clive, I appreciate it so much. Thanks so much for being on. It's a pleasure and honor, and I'm looking forward to having further conversations with you down the road. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick. I've enjoyed it.
Everybody, thanks for tuning in. We'll be back again next week with another episode. Don't forget to subscribe. We are getting some really good names and people not only emailing us and saying, I would like to be on, or saying you should be talking to so-and-so. So again, really appreciate if you could subscribe and also send notes. My email address, rfox@vertifor.com. And we will see you next week. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Vertifor Insurance Podcast, and tune in next Thursday for a brand new episode. You can find more episodes at vertifor.com under the Resources tab or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, and if you enjoyed this episode, share it on social and spread the word. Don't forget to join in on the conversation and recommend future guests by messaging us at vertifor.com.